hello and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dittus.
And my name is Brandon Rhodes. We are broadcasting from the People's Republic of Portland, nestled in the heart of Cascadia.
We're the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way.
We're covering day-to-day life, food, alcohol, bicycles, alternative transportation, arts, culture, communications, the internet, diasporatic Saturnalia.
Diasporatic Saturnalia?
Yeah, you heard it.
I shudder to ask what that means, I guess.
Google it.
Okay, I'll look it up later. Good work. You got big words on your side, not so much on mine. This is the soft talking NPR version of the program because we are recording at 11:19. We have a guest with us tonight, Lewis Abden, who actually just knocked over a bottle of Old Crow. It's tightly sealed, but I'm going to make sure it's sitting upright so that it doesn't stain the garbage should it spill out.
Well played, sir.
Thank you, Lewis. So anyways, here we are, and this has been a fantastic week. We put up the article on the episode about fertility and being able to read your signs as a lady and all that, and it was an exciting episode. Didn't get a whole lot of feedback about it, but the one guy that did email in, he said, enough with the vagina talk, and I said, well, we cover a lot of different topics surrounding simple living, and maybe if you didn't like that one, you'll like the next one. So here we are, and
will not be discussed beyond this moment.
That's right, we're not talking about that tonight. So there you go.
If you were uncomfortable in our last episode, we're proud of you for making it through.
That's right.
We promise you fair sailing ahead.
Indeed. Well, before I go on any farther, we've got a way for you to contact us. If you want to send us an email, as many people did, you can get us at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com, or you can phone us and leave us a message, which we will play on the show at 503-847-9774. That's thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com and 503-847-9774. So we did hear from a lot of people, and I'm going to consult my notes so I know who I'm talking about.
That's a big sheet there.
That is, yeah. There's a lot of folks. Probably one of the things I was really excited about was to hear from folks in Fort Collins, Colorado. There was Jordana, who is, I think, the leader of a all-female bicycle gang in Fort Collins, and she said, hey, we're digging the podcast, and so I think we may actually end up having her come on the show at some point remotely and talk a little bit about that endeavor. Apparently, there's a lot of people doing awesome things on bikes down in Fort Collins. I think I also corresponded with Aaron, who is down in Fort Collins. He's not part of the Bell Stars, as they're known, because he's a man, but he's otherwise enthralled with the bicycling and touring and all that stuff. So good to talk with folks. That was via the Facebook. You can find us on Facebook if you want to. If your life is not all that simple and you still have electronic media, social media in your life, as we all do. The other cool thing was that those folks in Fort Collins, some of them work at the New Belgium Brewing Company, which is, it's a fantastic, fantastic establishment. You might know them from their Fat Tire Ale. So anyways.
It's one of the macro brews that aspire to micro brewdom.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's right, Lewis. But they're good
some
people.
Some profound shit this early in the episode.
And I mean,
for being, drink it.
For being a major distributor, I think they have some really good philosophical points. So, but anyways, great to hear from you folks in Fort Collins. Also, we talked to Josh in Oakland, California, and Greg in Portland, Oregon. There was actually another guy that just wrote into us, Steven in Tennessee, and he said we're one of the few podcasts that he can actually access at work. So it was kind of exciting, I guess. I'm not sure if they have like filtering software or if there's some deal. But anyways, we're one of the few things he can listen to at work. So that's awesome. And he said, hey, add a PayPal button. So I did, and he sent me some money. So Stephen, you're an amazing person. I think when he wrote me, we were just at episode 4 is what he was listening to, and he said, life without microwaves, interesting. So Stephen, good luck getting through the rest of it. Hope you enjoy what you hear. And by the time you get to this, thank you so much for your donation. You bought the whiskey that we're drinking tonight. So awesome. Speaking of drinks, we should probably describe the things that we are going to be putting down the old hatch tonight.
That's right. So, Brock, you want to start it up?
Yeah, for sure. I stopped by our local convenience store, the Plaid Pantry here in Portland, and I got something called Genesee. I think that's how you say it. Genesee beer. It's just a big white can with kind of an oval-shaped red label, and it says one great brewery, one great taste, and it's 24 ounces. Well, that's one pint and 8 float ounces. So I actually had one of these earlier tonight, and I'm going to have another one here on the show. So it's fantastic. So, Brandon, what do you got?
Well, I didn't want to get a really big beer, but I wanted to have a really strong beer. So I got the Double Dog. It's a double pale ale.
Double Dog, as in like Double Dog Dare?
I suppose, you know, I have not made the connection. It's got a terrifying picture of what seems to be a dog pig monster head grafted onto like...
Dog pig monster head.
Like Jabba the Hutt in a diaper. It's really screwed up.
And, I can't think of anything
eating
that's more
a couple
scary.
Beers. Well, look at this. Look at this. I told you.
That's frightening.
That's terrifying.
Terribly frightening.
Yeah, anyway, it's, let's see, who makes them? Flying Dog Ales, it's 11.5% alcohol 11.5. By volume.
No wonder it's terrifying.
With 85 Seriously. IBUs.
Wow.
So it's on the bitter side, and it has a really great quote at the bottom I wanted to share. Good people drink good beer.
Indeed they do.
Hunter S. Thompson.
Oh, there you go.
See, so
I wouldn't have guessed that, but
good people drink bad beer too. But
that's true.
Only good people drink good beer.
Indeed. So yeah. Well, hey, cheers to Hunter S. Thompson, and you know, may he rest in peace. And also cheers to anybody who makes awesome beer that's 11%. So
that's
fantastic. And Lewis, what did you bring tonight?
Well, I brought a cocktail. It's the Oregon Mulled Water cocktail. And it
it's a long name.
It has three ingredients, grappa, kombucha, and Lithia spring water.
All three of those are things that I'm completely unaware of, so you should probably describe all three.
You bet. And the name of the cocktail is very apt, given these three ingredients. Grappa is made, well, okay, when they press grapes, they press them twice for wine or grape juice. And then what they're left over with is a bunch of mutilated grape pieces.
Hmm.
They then flood these pieces with water, let it stew and soak up any remaining sugars.
Nice.
And then they make alcohol from this this mash.
Nice.
They distill it into liquor called grappa.
There you go.
That's one ingredient. Kombucha is a fermented tea.
And actually, I should say I do know what kombucha is, but
yes,
but maybe
for those who don't,
it starts out as sugar tea. If you are in the South and listening to this, just think of what you can pick up at any fast food restaurant in the gallon
sweet tea.
Type. Yeah, that.
Yeah, it's pretty much that.
It starts out like that,
yeah.
But then you add a culture of bacteria and fungus. Yeast.
Somewhat akin to like yogurt.
A distant relative of yogurt. This is a badass culture from the Far East. It would kick yogurt's ass.
Does it look like a pig dog, baby?
Would you say it's more talky or like egg whites?
Go on the internet and Goog the booch right
okay.
now,
All
and
right.
you will see this. This particular kombucha was brewed by my father-in-law, and it is overripe. It is more on the vinegar side of the scale of fermented things. And oddly enough, it goes really well with the grappa. The last ingredient is Lithia spring water, which comes from Ashland, Oregon. And it is a highly mineralized artesian groundwater that has, iron phosphates, bicarbonate, calcium, a bunch of dissolved gases. And it's supposed to be really good for your body, really healthy. The downside is it smells like rotten eggs coming out.
And so it's definitely hard water then.
Yes, very extremely hard water. And there is a fountain in downtown Ashland that that just has these available for drinking. And it's kind of one of those things that children double dog dare each other to drink because it is absolutely horrible and yet supposed to be good for you. Anyway,
right.
It complements the other two mold ingredients very well.
Nice.
And it'll set you back and then also take care of your hangover. The kombucha nicely filters all that. So
that's nice.
Long
it's loaded
story.
With B vitamins, which alcohol depletes. So
yes.
Nice.
Well then.
When I was bestowed the honor to appear on this podcast, I knew exactly what I would bring to drink.
Oh, shucks. And Lewis and I were hanging out together some weeks back, and we were playing some music together, and I think that was when we came up with the term mold water. So this is like the this is the official mold water that has all of the fantastic ingredients. So that's awesome.
It's sophisticated. It has a sophisticated palate. Actually,
it does.
You would be surprised.
May I? No, I'd like to try my own before I try that. Actually, I'm opening mine.
There we go.
Cheers, everybody.
Cheers to you. Well, hey, there's a bunch of things in the news that we were looking at, but before we get to that, there is the folks that we had on two podcasts ago from Path Less Pedaled, Russ and Laura. Russ made an instructional video this last week, I think. I'm not sure when he made it, actually, but he just posted it, I think, this last week about how to pack your bike for the train here in America. So if you're going to do a bike tour or go somewhere long distance by train with your bike, he showed you exactly how to do that in this video. So if you don't mind cueing that sound, Brandon.
Oh, yeah. This is
Russ.
This is what it sounds like.
Hey there, everyone. It's Russ from Path Less Pedaled. In this video, I'm going to show you how to prep your bike for the train.
There you go. So if you're interested in learning a bit more about that, you can check that out, and we'll put a link up to that. But their website, of course, is pathlesspedaled.com. There's a couple things from bikeportland.org. Thanks to Mr. Jonathan Moss, the Grand Inquisitor and interrogator of that site, also general editor and all-around good guy. Just a couple of things that we want to direct you to. We'll put some links to these on the website so you can check them out. There was an interesting People on Bikes photo essay, and he talked a little bit about how he likes to humanize bicycling by showing people that aren't wearing Lycra. I mean, we love everyone that rides a bike, obviously, but there's a lot of different kinds of people that do ride bikes, and so he has a fantastic collection of photos kind of spanning the gamut of all the different folks that that might ride bikes here in Portland. So that's a fantastic thing. He also just put up, I think, for the weekend, a photo gallery about tall bikes. So all the various folks that have welded one bike frame on top of another and made that mechanically viable and structurally sound and ridden that around town. So two great photo galleries there. So we'll put links up to that so you can check them out. He also found a story from another blog, and I can't remember, what is it, lovelybike.blogspot.com. But they were talking a little bit about what they call the Mary Poppins effect, which is cyclists in normal clothes seeming less offensive to drivers. And it was interesting. They were just talking about, I mean, you see how that might be the case, right?
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah. It talked a little bit about the perception of a cyclist, and apparently, I think there was some kind of survey or study that they had done, but they had said that basically if someone driving a vehicle, a car or a truck or something, sees a guy in a helmet and spandex all crouched down and in racer mode, they're not going to be as charitably disposed towards that person as if they see someone riding upright on a Dutch-style bike and basically looking like Mary Poppins or a respectable member of society, even though the racing cyclist is probably going faster and not getting in the way as much. So if you want to read more about that, we'll have a link up to that too.
There we go.
There was photos of school kids biking to a field trip during the 1970s, during the oil embargo here in Portland. And instead of sending them out in school buses, they just said, hey, kids, grab your bikes. We're going to go on a field trip. And so there's some photos from that, so you can check that out.
Solid logic right there.
Yeah, exactly. And it's kind of funny, too, because, I mean, me being a school bus driver, that's like the last option they would choose, especially with all the potential lawsuits. And
the union.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, what are you going to do? Some people need to work. So anyways, that was kind of interesting.
If you don't let us drive the buses, we won't drive the buses.
That's right.
strike.
That's what we want you to do. Next story.
That's right. London, the city of London, is experimenting with take another running start at that. London is experimenting with legal two-way cycle traffic on otherwise one-way streets. So they're taking streets that everybody has to just ride one way on. There's no yellow dividing line. And they're saying bicycles, you can go back and forth. And I haven't looked into that to find out exactly how the logistics of that play out. But
that'd be interesting. This must be some sort of widespread plan. I know in the States, occasionally that happens.
Yeah.
It's more of an accident than a plan, but Mm-hmm. Bicyclists, they need to get through sometimes, yeah. And they just make it happen.
And it hasn't been made illegal anywhere. I mean, there's a couple of spots here in Portland that I've seen where they have a specialized bike lane that would go in opposition to otherwise one-way traffic. But that's not a common occurrence. That's just a couple spots.
Right, right.
But I think this is just any one-way street. I think they're trying to, yeah. So anyways, we'll have to look into that a little bit more.
Crazy. But,
yeah. So anyways, those are some of the stories that caught my eye this week on bikeportland.org.
Great.
And other places that Mr. Jonathan Moss referred us to. So yeah.
Good on him.
I should say, if you want to check out his blog every week, he's got a news roundup of interesting stories from all around the world, as well as many informative and entertaining articles about bicycling in the Portland, Oregon metro area. So anyways, that's that. Well, Lewis, do you want to talk a little bit about gardening?
Yeah, yeah.
Since you came by, since you're here at 11:30 at night, I figure there must be a reason you're staying awake.
I think was this the first time you've revealed the topic of the evening?
I think so, yeah. I mean, once we post this online, I think there'll be a title that probably hints at that. But yeah, we didn't actually mention that until just now.
Well, surprise, it's the topic of the evening is
ta-da.
Is gardening.
Hooray! No, I want to introduce Lewis here. Lewis Abdon is a spectacular gentleman. Artist and scholar.
That's right.
And I've known for about, what, six years now.
Yeah, you guys go way back.
Way back when as a...
Back to Eugene, right?
As
back to
a political activist and impassioned do-gooder in Eugene, Oregon. And lived with Lewis, hiked with Lewis, laughed with Lewis. He's a man full of experience, mirth, and... passion for gardening.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. And actually, I do remember there was a story I heard about. Brandon, were you there when there was a bench from a certain bicycle shop that was stolen and then later returned?
I was there when we stole a chair from the University of Oregon and threw it into the Willamette River.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
Public art. Public art.
It is public. We were establishing public art.
It's an installation of sorts.
Yes, I borrowed a bench from an unnamed... public or cooperatively owned bicycle shop.
For sure.
When I was a young man and foolish, and eventually was born again at that time, and I realized I could not live with this borrowed bench any longer. I took it back and left a note of apology on Christmas night.
On Christmas?
That's beautiful.
2005.
Well, what better time for reconciliation, really?
I know. It was,
that's fantastic.
It was a high point of a low point of my life.
Yeah. There was also another
spike
story.
In the middle of the Dead Valley.
Another thing I just remember is that Lewis and I, back in the day, we had some friends that lived in Oregon City. We lived in southeast Portland at the time. And we actually, I think on a summer day, we rode all the way to the top of the plateau that Oregon City kind of straddles. And that was a big climb. But we ended up riding the entire distance. And yeah, that was exciting. So,
yes, and that may not sound like very much, but Oregon City actually has a municipal elevator to deal with this elevation gain problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's quite a cliff.
Quite so. Do you think it's like 1,000 feet? I'd have to look it up to be sure, but...
800, 900, but yeah. Cliff-like
is it
style.
That high?
Yes. It's way up there.
Immediate
no
elevation.
Shit.
Instantaneous.
Yeah, it's pretty
high. This is the third topic to Google tonight.
That's right, yeah, yeah. Well, you fire up your search engines, people.
A.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so...
yeah, that being said.
Welcome, yes. Lewis. Welcome, Lewis.
Lewis, stand-up gentleman.
And I should also thank both Brock and Brandon for influencing my life to a great degree and bringing me here today, particularly Brandon, in that he showed me the beauty and art and artistry of gardening and also the logic behind it. And so I guess,
I like all this revelry. I'll take it.
Yeah. I'll start practically, I suppose. When gardening, you've got to start small. You've got to start basic. One seed.
Just one.
One seed.
Okay.
That begins the process of creating food for yourself, to consume. Something that you saw grow, something that you know the inputs for, the energy inputs, the biomechanical inputs, and it comes to your table, and it is so delicious, and it connects you both to the world immediately around you and also to the wider scheme of how life requires or scheme.
Oh, okay.
Depending on how you pronounce that.
I read a lot as a child, still don't know how to pronounce some words.
Yeah, that's fine. It's not all that important.
The scheme of...
Sorry, I totally fucked things up. Keep going.
Life requires sacrifice.
Yeah.
And that comes home to roost when you are eating something that you made. You are taking it out of existence, so to speak. It's, you know, really becoming part of your body. But that lesson is beautiful. And so start small. You know, don't be afraid to put one bean, and actually start with beans. They are the super seed of the world.
They're the best?
They are the most powerful seed you will ever find.
No kidding.
Nice.
They will sprout under any conditions. They throw up a fully formed and functional plant in about 7 days.
Wow.
That cannot be defeated by your average little mold or other lack of watering.
So they're not like the goldfish of plant rearing then?
No, they are the superstar destroyer of plant rearing.
They're like the beta fish?
Yes.
I remember just bringing goldfish home and they would die like the second day. You know? So bean sprouts are much different.
Yes. They're grab hardy, pinto resilient. Bean or a green bean.
Yeah, fava. Fava is really great.
Okay. Brandon had to go there. Fava beans are the beans of beans.
They are. Bean, pa bean, bean suma bean.
They grow one, and you will see what we're talking about. Once you get used to the miracle of life appearing before you, then go for the smaller seeds, and they will reward you similarly with the miracle of life.
So you'd say that the large seeds are a little hardier than the smaller seeds if you're just trying to get started?
They have more energy contained in the seed to send the plant on its way, a journey of life. Interesting point. Seeds don't technically stop living. They are continual life. They appear to stop living, and thus a seed must die before it must grow. But and you have to give it that dormant period. But it is always living. It's waiting to start the journey.
It's in this dormant state.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Reminds me of my uncle, actually.
I was going to say. Reminds me of Star Trek and the Wrath of Khan.
No, I didn't go.
Okay.
I was getting really excited about different seed sizes. And I wanted to riff on that, but it's okay.
Probably one of the smallest seeds that I've grown is the basil or basil seed or a carrot seed. They're all fairly related.
That's right. Those things are tiny.
Yes. Excruciatingly tiny. But powerful nonetheless. Not as powerful as beans, of course.
Nothing could be.
And
the foolishness of beans is still higher than the wisdom of... Okay, anyway.
Fennel.
I can't stop myself from regaling on the intricacies of each one of these plants as we bring them up. Carrots will send down a taproot 6 feet into the ground.
6 feet?
Yes.
That's almost as tall as I am.
And it can eventually swell the entire taproot.
My goodness.
In Alaska, it can do that. Like, they can grow 6 foot long carrots.
Yeah, you don't see that swelling. Of course, you see the carrot that's 8 inches long. But going off the tip of that carrot is a hair.
Also reminds me of my uncle. This is great.
Don't take this conversation too literally, but a little hair goes down into the ground, collecting nutrients. It's quite now. That relates to the need for good tilth. If you have plants in your garden that are sending down nutrient gathering roots that deep, then you really need to look for a nice loose soil, at least 2 or 3 feet deep.
The word was tilth.
Tilth, T-I-L-T-H.
I don't think I've heard that. What does that mean?
It literally means workability of the soil, or you can think of it as the niceness of the soil.
Okay. It's like amenable.
Yeah, we're jumping all over the place, but I'll just jump to you've got to think like a plant.
Think like a plant.
When you are growing plants.
Be the plant.
You agree with this.
You've got to, what is the plant going through? What is it having to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
It's sending out these roots. What are those roots? What are the obstacles? What are the amenities? How are you assisting it? How are you thwarting its dreams?
Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking just like some of the obstacles being like there's stones in the soil or something where it can't send this taproot down.
Yes.
There's like hard clay that it can't really get nutrients from.
Well, clay, ironically, actually has a ton of nutrients.
Oh, never mind.
But the hard clay part, you're right. Okay. It should be loosened up. You got to bust up that clay. And, of course, that brings up the fact that eventually you're going to have to read about gardening.
Okay.
Because there's a lot to it. Yes. Yeah, so read about the process of busting up clay. It's actually a great soil. There's 1,000 years of fertility in the clay of the Willamette Valley.
My goodness, that's pretty deep.
Really?
And there are probably many other places in the world that also have like a similar just piles and piles of nutrients.
And
that, fertility is brought to you by Eastern Washington. Thank you very much for it. And the Montezuma floods.
That's right.
Google it.
Montezuma floods. Check it out.
So it's good to have soil. It's good to have soil that is easily workable by those roots, nice and loose, moist but not too wet, not too dry. Yes, we've talked about feeling the world like a plant would. What other obstacles are out there? Is there a bug or an insect of some kind that's munching on your plants, giving your plants a hard time?
Do I have friends? No, do I have friends?
Exactly.
Like, do I have people that are looking out for me, like bugs that'll eat the bad bugs?
Right, right.
Or are there bacteria in the soil that may be interested in acquiring nutrients and in making an exchange for sugar, for example?
Exactly.
Yeah, like, I don't
that
know.
All happens.
Yeah, I don't know a whole lot about that whole just the give and take of all the different people that, that live in like a square foot of garden, but I know it's amazingly complex and intricate, and that's a fascinating thing. Just like there are so many different factors and so many different life forms at work.
Dirt is alive.
Yeah.
Yes, it is complicated and intricate, but it's also self-regulating.
Nice.
So
that means you don't have to do everything.
Right.
You don't have to buy ladybugs.
You don't have to buy ladybugs. And I guess we may be dancing around a bush that not everyone knows of, but don't use pesticides.
Speak of this bush.
Yes, the bush of organic gardening.
Tell us something about this bush that we are dancing about.
I said no more of it.
going back to square one.
Indeed.
Organic gardening is done with no chemical pesticides, at least none that will really F up a system. Are you going to edit this later?
No.
Okay. I mean, that joke is totally standing.
Well, you don't want to fuck up your garden with poison.
Yeah.
Just say it.
And the corollary to that is the fertilizer that you use. You want to avoid the harsh chemical fertilizers. They're not necessarily bad for you, but they're bad for the community of your garden.
Right.
So if you stick to natural sources of the nutrients that your plants need, you're going to end up with a better self-regulating complex system of organisms that support each other.
So it can manage itself better.
Yeah.
Instead of depending on you more heavily. So in the long run, you can actually have a bit more of a dynamic relationship with the garden instead of dependent.
Would you call that, like, if you're using a bunch of pesticides, could you almost refer to that as the gentrification of the garden's neighborhood?
Definitely.
Like there's a bunch of
more like genocidification.
That's a lot worse.
Hang on, that still definitely gets the
That's right.
Well, at any rate, plants need three basic foods and some other ones. Nitrogen. That's the protein part. It helps them grow their plant bodies.
Okay.
Potassium also helps with the plant bodies. And then phosphorus. And phosphorus helps with fruits and roots. So if you're growing tomatoes, you need lots of phosphorus. And nitrogen, which I mentioned earlier, helps a lot with the tissue of the plant. So if you're growing lettuce, there's obviously you're eating the tissue of the plant.
If it's green, like the green parts, necessarily the fruits or roots, necessarily the stem, but the big solar panels that we call leaves.
Exactly. Hmm.
The roughage?
I'll accept that.
Yeah.
What we're alluding to here is that different vegetables that you grow in your garden require a different mix of these three main nutrients, but all plants need these three main nutrients. They also need calcium.
Mm-hmm.
And
that's the big one. That's the big runner-up to the big three.
Good for bones, good for plants.
I should have really.
No, that's okay.
There's many tiny ones, but they appear in almost all soil, so you don't have to worry about them.
Okay, yeah.
They're out there.
Just get them out of the ground.
Or your lithium water.
That's right.
Magnesium. That's the one I'm thinking of.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Good call.
So, and actually for our Northwest gardeners in the Willamette Valley, calcium and magnesium are you should pay attention to those because they dissolve in water and it rains here. So
a lot of rain.
Yes. And it's easy to overwater gardens.
Yes, so. Easy to overwater gardens. You really want to strive for watering deeply, like completely saturating the soil. So this takes hours.
Yeah.
To completely saturate a garden in the summer when it's 90 degrees.
Right.
But you only have to do it like every 3 days.
Oh.
Completely soak your garden every three. And as it dries out, the plant will say to itself, man, I'm drying out. Maybe I should dig deeper with my roots. And it'll send roots deeper to find the moisture down there because you soaked everything. And in the process, we'll find more nutrients.
So this soaking process is almost like a personal trainer. It's like it's making the plant do something it wouldn't naturally do, but it makes it stronger.
Well, it does naturally do it. It doesn't do it if you water your garden every day shallowly.
Oh.
It stops it from doing what it wants to do.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So you can think of it as a personal trainer, or you can think of it as the natural process coming to fruition.
Okay.
I can testify to this. No, I can totally testify to this because I used to be a bit more like in tune with my gardens and be able to sort of just abide in what they need. And I would follow a similar method. The more panicky and I was, and the more tertiary, I guess you might say, gardening has become to my life. I tend to water every day, and my plants kind of suck. Like my green thumb has turned sort of a middle into fair.
Yeah,
yellowish.
It's fantastic. Thumb. We might want to take a break here real quick. We'll interject a quick musical thing, and then we'll come back and talk a little bit more about the fine and intricate art of gardening with Lewis Apton. But I'm going to play a song for you. This track is called Stand By My Side. This is a song that I wrote back in like 2002. It was like the first two songs or something that I wrote. This is one of them. And so my friend Rusty makes fun of me for rhyming the words love and above. But, I mean, it was my first song. Come on. So anyways, I put this out on an EP called Handbuilt in 2009. If you want to check it out, listen to it on MySpace. It's myspace.com/Brock Dittus. And here it is. We'll be right back in a minute.
Stand by my side, and I see you just let things slide. Do you see where you're coming from? What you could become. I know we've been here so long, and I know it's hard to be strong. I see you stand by my side. It's been a tough year. Do you see how far we have gone? Do you see that we can go
there will never know how much fun we were having with our setup here, just speaking through the microphone without an audience. It's totally different.
Good times.
Yeah.
Good
times. So anyways.
Those were some awesome rhymes in that song, Brock. I just want you to know.
Thank you.
I was really moved by them.
I do my very best. So, Lewis, you wanted to talk about, I'm totally blanking. You wanted to talk about beauty in gardens?
The richness of gardening.
All right. Yeah. Now that I've let you talk about that, you should proceed.
I was reminded of the richness of gardening as Brandon mentioned his green thumb that was withering to a pale yellow.
That's right.
And
got better.
And that is what a garden offers you. I mean, it offers not only withering but also growth. You get to see a tiny little leaf grow into a much larger leaf that sustains a plant that grows these intricate shaped objects that are edible, and you get to observe the soil be changed by your actions. You become a partner with a process that is amazing and beautiful, and there's a lot of richness there if you slow down to take moments to appreciate what is going on in a garden.
And so that's the sort of thing that most people probably aren't going to go to right away, right? Like, I mean, I think of plants as kind of static and I know they grow, but I don't see them changing or moving or anything. And so right. It seems like, yeah, it would be easy just to assume that it's like, you know, like 8-bit graphics from a video game.
And its terms of relationship are, all right, term number one, chill the fuck out.
That's a good, yes.
And like, you wouldn't like date anybody that was like, all right, we're going to be cool and all, but you got to chill the fuck out, like first date. But that's what gardening is like.
Mm-hmm. Because,
but it gives you potatoes.
Exactly. And that's kind of a double-edged sword because people approach the situation as this thing's going to give me food.
Mm-hmm.
Give me some food.
You just see it as a delivery system.
Sure. Exactly. And instead, it should really be seen as a community of not of equals, but of pets.
You
perhaps.
Do eat them, after all.
You do eat them.
you could, we are the zombies. They are the aged humans.
Their spiritual footprint is on a different level, and so they're not equals, but it's a community of life, of livingness, and so having them as pets or silent friends, you could say,
sure,
really goes a long way in experiencing the beauty and the richness of gardening, and then that actually translates into a bigger bounty. Because believe it or not, the plants that people grow from seed in their gardens have been bred for food. Mm-hmm. That's what they want to do.
Sure, they just want to make fruit.
That's all
and
they
vegetables
know.
And yeah, big leaves.
Totally,
and stuff.
They want to be taken care of. They can't survive out in the wild. Brandon, you told me this when you turned me on to gardening. They just can't. They need us, but they want to be friends with us. They want to be our special little buddies. And so if you look at gardening as...
I'm not laughing at the idea. It just sounds funny when you say it, I think.
Sure. Which is why they love us, because that's why their first words to you are, chill the fuck out.
Right.
Like the plants abide, man.
Exactly.
That's right.
They definitely abide. You just must listen to their story.
Listen to their story and move your time frequency into their time frequency. They can't move. So they are not
also
in a hurry.
Also like my uncle.
Not in a hurry.
None of this is true.
Plants are not in a hurry. I say all this to encourage people who may be considering the move to a local food source, their yard or a planter box. You can really start on a tiny scale. You know, I mentioned earlier, start with one seed. You can also start with one plant. Lettuce is a good place to start, or kale, even better.
Oh, yeah.
Kale is part of the brassica family.
Yeah.
Kohlrabi, cauliflower, broccoli.
Cabbage,
kale. They,
was that
kale.
A subtle pun on my name?
No.
Because I don't take kindly to that.
It's pointing out the the K.
But I kid.
Sit back down, bro.
This is, and believe it or not, all these fancy sounding words, brassica and whatnot, they're mustards.
Really?
Yes.
All of them.
Literally the mustard seed of the garden family are these related plants.
All the brassicas.
All the brassicas. It's kind of weird to think that broccoli and cabbage are pretty much the same plant.
Hmm.
But indeed they are, just over the millennia.
Just different hairstyles.
The three millennia, according to some, and the many millennia, according to others. the mustard plant has been bred for its different features, whether you want to eat the flowers or the leaves, or kohlrabi is for the stems. Turnips is... For the roots.
I'd like to go back to this thing you were saying, just about like start with one lettuce plant. Because I think most people, if they're saying like, let's start a garden, they're saying, hey, let's start like a whole garden with a bunch of all, you know, different varieties.
Don't
let's
do that.
Let's get like watermelons and let's grow like huge, enormous pumpkins so we can carve at Halloween. And
Remember the plant's first words.
Yeah, that's right. Chill the fuck out.
Right, man. So take it easy and experience the beauty of a tiny, you know, I encourage you, actually, young listeners, 8 year olds,
all you 8 year olds,
I don't know how you guys got the
past the
explicit warning on iTunes. Steve Jobs is disappointed in you for lying to him. That's why he has cancer.
Oh, okay, and he should eat more brassica because they are cancer-fighting plants.
That's right, and cancer's not funny. But we're just saying, if you want to eat brassicas, they'll take care of some of that.
Yeah,
no promises. The statement has not been approved by anybody.
That's right.
No, they have what do they call that? Anti-carcinogenic. Anti-free, blah, blah, okay. Blah, blah, blah.
A lot of vitamin C.
Okay, vegetables are good for you. Big surprise. Okay. But start simple because, in fact, I would suggest you don't look in your first years for food. Look for the experience. Grow the plants for their own beauty.
Yeah, and I'm just thinking, like, if you are going to start a garden with all these different plants, it seems like the variety might almost be a distraction from learning how plants work in general. Mm-hmm. Is that right? Yeah.
Yep, that is correct.
Probably. Okay.
You sound like a gardener already.
No, thank
actually.
You. I'm posing well.
So that's how you start. You start small. You start with plants as pets. You pay attention to what's going on. And here I might mention, as you start an organic garden, you eventually notice here or there things that also eat vegetables. Those white butterflies that flutter around in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
As we all know, caterpillars turn to butterflies. And the caterpillar form of that white butterfly is known as the cabbage looper moth caterpillar.
Wow. So it likes cabbage so much that it was named after it.
Yes. It will sit on your brassica, and it also eats other vegetables, but it loves brassicas of any kind, and munch away. And when your brassica is a young plant trying to make it in the world, a caterpillar munching down on it 24/7 is a big obstacle. Throw down.
Because it's eating not just perhaps the part you want to eat, but like the solar panels. So
right,
it's
right.
kind of retarding its ability to make what you want.
And tender shoots of solar panels that aren't quite there yet.
It's eating the children.
And that brings me to a point of your best defense against any pet is get your plants up and running and strong. Then it's okay to have a couple caterpillars hanging around because they can't eat a giant cabbage plant, but they can eat a baby cabbage.
Yeah. Best defense against any pest or...
Yes.
Okay.
Any
pets. I think you said any pet, so I wasn't sure. But sometimes pets can be pests in the garden, so.
That's true. Yeah. There are so many interrelated points. Also, in a garden, you don't want dogs and cats. They will step on your good tilth.
Right, right.
They will
not to mention
possibly
that,
poop in it.
Well, yeah, cat shit apparently is the most toxic stuff in the world, so you got to keep your cats far away from that garden.
I can't substantiate that, but I do know that cats stomp on your carefully fluffed soil. You want fluffy soil.
Tell you what,
bury their shit and kick it up. Go ahead.
One way to really piss off Lewis is if you're hanging out around his garden and you've been working on bed making, which he and I did. I think I helped you make some of not your first beds, but
this is true.
When we got together, I think it was maybe one of the first beds you had dug in Portland, and
yes.
I don't remember if it was me or somebody else, but somebody just put like a big old footprint right in the middle of your garden bed, and you were just You're a kind guy and you're a gentle guy and you're well spoken and you don't try to hurt people, but I could see like as that footprint was put into the garden, I could just see you kind of visibly becoming disturbed, just like no. So
right, yeah. It's all about that fluffy tilth.
Right, right, right. And you have to have good tilth. That's what you're saying.
You are thinking like the plant.
Right. This is going to create an obstacle. It's going to compress the dirt closer together. There's not going to be air pockets. There's actually air in dirt, or soil, we call it. There should be air in there. It allows microbes to grow, bacteria to grow. It allows the roots to grow, obviously. And then it allows certain microbes to absorb nitrogen from the air. As you may know, 70% of air is nitrogen, and plants need nitrogen to grow. So these little microbes suck the nitrogen out of air that is in soil.
Hmm.
And they attach it to rootlets of legumes, which are your beans and your peas. And so having air in the soil is very key. You want to have little paths in your garden that you walk on, and then vast areas that no one walks on or pushes on when they're weeding or touches mostly in any way, shape, or form.
You got to protect the tilth.
It's a gift to the plants and to the little bacteria and critter and shit.
Yeah. Yes. And eventually with karma.
But not your cats.
Well, eventually with karma, just back to you.
Yes.
So, yeah.
And you may be noticing a tension between the message of chill the fuck out and my anality over do not step in the garden beds. And,
sure.
And indeed, there is a tension there. And
you are the plant's bitch.
Yeah. Well, I have to say.
That's what I'm saying. You're whipped. You are whipped, dude.
I need to take it easy sometimes. I need to take a chill pill. And that's all about life's journey and the spirit's journey with all of us, getting us into the right spot. And I would advocate gardening as a hobby for anyone who's trying to get in touch with the spirit, with a good feeling, oneness with God, understanding God's love for us on this planet. Gardening has it all there in microcosm. I mean, not all. I mean, there's a lot to the story.
Sure.
It doesn't have supernovas, but I mean, it's quite an interesting process.
But there are supernova-like processes on the molecular level, I think. That
Indeed.
Was poorly pronounced.
Google it.
But anyways.
Oh. So go out, inspect your plants, inspect your babies, look for those cabbage loop or moth larvae as they grow. Look for other little critters. Aphids are a big one. You won't find aphids unless you look for them because they're tiny. If you do find them, squish them. That is always the first defense against a bug eating your vegetables.
Is you stopping that bug.
Well, the cleanliness of your fingers is something you will have to sacrifice.
Definitely.
To love these little stinkers.
Lewis was the one that taught me how to squeeze little baby slugs between my fingertips.
Or at least throw them into your neighbor's yard.
Yes, slugs are a problem. In Europe, it is organically acceptable to feed slugs sluggo, which is a tiny bit of metal, iron phosphate, which humans can eat, no problem. Turns out slugs conduct electricity from metal.
Are you serious?
Yeah. And so when they eat a little bit of it, they feel full because of that conduction happening in their stomach, and they stop eating.
Wow. So
you turn them into Kate Moss.
It is Europe, after all.
Well, yeah.
And feel free to use sluggo as long as you're not a commercial organic grower. In that case, in the United States, you are forbidden.
That's true. That would kind of squash your good time. Yeah. Well, maybe we should wrap up soon here, but Lewis, do you want to talk just a little bit about futility and maybe a perspective on that?
Yeah. Seeing as how this is the Sprocket podcast, all about... enjoying the simple life and simplifying. There's another fundamental tension besides stepping in my garden beds. Of agriculture is all about, you know, thousands of years ago, people rejecting the simple life of hunting and gathering. And
sure.
Saying, I want more.
Right.
I want more. I can get more if I organize myself and some soil around me to grow stuff for me to eat. And as urbanists trying to return towards a more simple way of looking at the world, we can try to take a simpler perspective, a slower perspective, an easier going perspective, and a more communally based perspective with the people around us, with those around us experiencing this garden process. I mean, we didn't mention that in this podcast, but you will discover it right away as you begin gardening.
That you need people around you to do it.
Yeah, and you want to share it.
They'll bump themselves into you.
Sure,
Yeah. It'll attract people. You'll want to share it. They'll want to share it with you.
Awaken you to the relational abundance around you.
Yeah.
It's a good thing.
But the fact of the matter is it's all predicated on this idea that hunting and gathering is not enough.
Mm-hmm.
And indeed, organic gardening is good, but if you use bat guano... Or green sand, which comes from rivers, or any other sort of organic material that is built up over the... Like, bat guano builds up in caves over thousands of years. Now we mine it and use it as fertilizer. There's a limited supply of that. Baby seedlings grow best in a little pot filled with peat moss. Well, we mine peat bogs. We strip mine them.
Right.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
That's creepy.
So you're taking things from one part of the natural world and maybe putting them somewhat unnaturally in a different part of the world.
Do the miners there get the green lung?
It's a good question.
Yeah.
And we get the green thumb. It's a great trade, turning lungs into thumbs.
So the point is there's a limited amount of all this out there. So even organic gardening is not necessarily sustainable in the way that we'd like it to be.
Sure.
In that it is a closed system where all the inputs equal the outputs and it can go round and round in a circle forever.
Yeah.
Now, there may be some hope with soybeans because soybeans are one of those legumes that pull nitrogen out of the air, and there is a nitrogen cycle that can go on and on forever. But still, that requires a growing of a hell of a lot of soybeans just so that we can grow a few vegetables. I mean, it's a problem.
Yeah, kind of like the biodiesel problem. Just it's kind of like a self-defeating system into eternity. But yeah.
So at its heart, a pursuit of gardening vegetables and eating vegetables that you've grown has to be well-founded in the pursuit of relationship and healthy relationships, respecting people around you, respecting the earth around you, and respecting plants, and having a good time with them.
Sure, because otherwise you're just going to be you're going to be contributing to that agricultural system that's kind of taking us away from the natural order of things.
Right. You're going to be contributing to that, and you're going to be disappointed ultimately.
Sure.
Because satisfaction is not wrung from the conquering of nature, but mm-hmm. rather through the participation in the beauty mm-hmm. of life with everything around you.
Nicely said. Nicely said.
Holy
and it seems,
fuck.
Yeah. It seems like our minds have been blown officially now. It does seem like...
Hang on. There
we go. Nicely done. It does seem as though gardening is the sort of thing, like, if you pursue it and you jump into it with both feet and you get your hands dirty and do what you can...
And read about it.
And read about it and become educated. It seems like the sort of thing that can develop some of those admirable qualities inside you.
Indeed.
Yeah.
And be able to share with others. Like, invite other people over to help you with... Like, if you don't want to just start with one seat, you want to start with, like, 20.
Yeah.
Invite people over. Have fun. Have a barbecue. Like, eat some ribs.
Yeah, you get 20 people
listen
together.
Listen to this rocket.
That's right.
Yeah.
Get 20 people together. You could all grow 20 heads of lettuce and get started with the experience.
Yeah. And potatoes is a good one. They're happy to grow, and they can grow in hard soil.
And if you don't have 20 people around you all at once, you could start with 5 or 2 or whatever.
Or your dog.
But, yeah. Well, we should probably wrap up our show tonight, but we'd talk about the drinks and how pleasant they were. The one that I was drinking, the Genesee beer, its packaging reminds me a lot of a beer that I bought at Trader Joe's, which I think
it's exactly like it.
It really is exactly like it. It's kind of got like
Name tag, isn't it?
That's right. Yeah, the name tag lager. If this one is if it's not a PBR, it's maybe just a tad bit more not metallic, but maybe just a bit sharper. The PBR has a maybe a smooth mellow taste, and the Genesee beer, however you say that. Yeah, it's just a little bit sharper. So, yeah, it's been enjoyable. It's been tickling my palate. Brandon, how was your 11% monster?
I loved it.
finished it.
Yeah, I mean, it names itself an extra pale ale, and I found it to be there's very little pale about it. It reminded me of a pretty decent barley wine, like a barley wine that's not afraid to dance a little dirty.
That's fantastic. Dirty dancing with barley wine.
With a creepy pickaxe.
And then, of course, the mold water, Lois.
Yes. If you can get your hands on these ingredients, make this cocktail.
Repeat those ingredients.
It is grappa, a liquor, an overripe kombucha. Leave it in the cabinet for about an extra 2 months past when you would normally drink it.
Oh, my God.
That's
not overripe. That's soured.
I was going to say it's kind of like moonshine almost at that point, right?
It's still sugary. It's still sweet, but it's very vinegary. But, you know, those old-fashioned cocktails, you got to have the bitters in there.
Right, right. And that's what that's providing.
Yes. And then Lithia spring water from Ashland, Oregon provides that extra mellowness.
Or at least any water from Florida.
Sure.
If you're from Florida, like, it all tastes like Ashland there. So it's okay.
Can you get the Ashland water from somewhere? Like, do they bottle it or anything?
No, because it does smell like rotten eggs.
Okay.
A little bit.
But a lot of the country has that kind of shit in their water.
That's true.
Yeah. But let the sulfur, like, evaporate or whatever it does. Throw a couple of teaspoons into your cocktail. It melts it out. The aromatics are incredible. It's like a bouquet.
Yeah. Ooh, that's pretty good.
That's great. Well, yeah. Good luck finding your way to Ashland, Oregon, or in the absence of being able to go to Ashland, finding sulfuric water of any kind to make your mold water with. We want to thank you for joining us here on the Sprocket Podcast. There is an email address and a phone number you can contact us at. The email is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. The phone number, 503-847-9774. Send us your stories and let us know what we can do for you on the Sprocket Podcast. This is Brock and...
Brandon.
And...
Luis.
And we're signing out. Thanks again, and we will see you next week on the Sprocket.
Hasta luego.